This is No Pink Spandex, episode 23, for Friday, June 30th, 2006. Hello, hello, hello. Lisa J in his house for shizzles. Okay, I'm a little happy because of this episode. This very special episode that you guys have been waiting for. I interviewed Paul Schreier, better known as Bulkamaya Skolovich. So I met up with him last week, because today's Friday. Last week, Thursday, right before he was on his way back to California, and we met up at his hotel, and he had a little breakfast, good times, and two of his friends actually joined us later on. So you'll hear different things in this interview. So number one, you'll hear, you know, his friend Amanda, you know, talk a little bit, some. So you're wondering, who's that other girl? That's his friend Amanda. And also I have a correction. So Paul mentioned that JDF is now in Dallas. And unless it's something I don't know, which is probably most likely, most so because, you know, they friends, I ain't friends, they friends. But I'm most likely definitely sure he's in Houston and not in Dallas. But I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe Jason David Frank got something going on everywhere in Texas. He probably owned Texas by now. Anyway, that's beside the point. Let's get back to the interview. I'm not going to talk too long. Let's keep it rolling. Keep it moving. All right. So check it out and hope you like it. If you do, leave lots of comments on our website. Lots of comments. Woohoo. Yay. Okay. All right, I'll check y'all later. Just introduce yourself and give a bit of background, like your family, where you're from, stuff like that.
Okay, my family. Yikes. All right, so I'm Pauly Schreier, and I'm a performer and sometime director, originally from Las Vegas, Nevada. Born in 1970, that makes me old. And I'm married, and I've got a lot of family in Las Vegas, still, and a lot of family in Europe. I'm first generation, born here. All my people came over from Holland in 1959. So, there's a lot of Dutch going on, a lot of cheese in our household. And these days I'm in Los Angeles working at a very cool toy prototyping studio as a manager.
Oh, what kind of prototyping do you guys do? Like, what kind of
toys and collectibles?
Oh, okay.
Basically, a sculpting house. There's a 3D scanning business that we also do, where we're on movie sets, scanning actors.
Oh, okay.
Like, if you have, I don't know.
Oh, so you make action figures? Is that what it is? Like, you scan the people and then like.
Yes, we do that, but it's. I mean, we do everything from SpongeBob to Jesus. So, and I'll give you any flavor of Jesus you want. Jesus, Hector, Christ. Jesus, Asian Christ, any Jesus you want.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. So, like, when did you decide to get into the acting business, or just, like, the entertainment business in general? Like, what was your first?
Well, I mean, you know, when you live in Los Angeles, there's a lot of pressure on you if you're a strong type to go out and kind of give it a go in town, because the apparatus is there. And, you know, the agencies and the union, and, I mean, it's all right there. The production is right there. And so, you know, for me, I'm such a strong type that I just got sick of people telling me, hey, you should go do this, because everybody told me that.
Yeah.
Kind of from, like, age, like, 14, as I started getting into the latter phase of my high school career. So I started acting in high school at the behest of a crazy guy named Dan Schlund, who I was in a government class with, and he was just browbeating me to go audition for a play. And they were actually doing Streetcar at the time when he was busting my chops about it. And then later, he they did Guys and Dolls, and so I auditioned for that show and got in.
Oh, what did you play?
Nicely Johnson. Of course. Of course. So now the interesting thing about this guy, Dan Schlund, is that he's notable in his own right, because I was late in high school. I got a job at one of the Six Flags parks doing the announcing for the high diving show. You might have seen that at the state fairs and stuff, where they put up a big tower and they jump into a little tank.
Yeah, yeah.
And they do cool dives. Well, there's a couple of different companies that run those type of operations around the country, and there's two major ones, and I was employed by one of them as an announcer. So, of course, I put on my red, white, and blue outfit, got to go out on stage with a microphone, and so they got the show at Six Flags Magic Mountain in California.
Okay.
So I started working at that show, and that company eventually started doing stunt shows. So my buddy Dan, who had forced me to start acting, I kind of pulled him into that company because he was is a complete daredevil. And after hanging out with me, he realized, oh, they're doing a stunt show in Virginia. I want to go audition for that. And so he went and he got the job. Well, after now 10 years of being a stuntman, have you seen that James Bond rocket pack?
No, I haven't.
You've never seen the dude where he like flies into the stadium?
Yeah, the rocket pack. Yeah. Okay.
Well, those still exist.
Right.
And they are... And they're really dangerous. They run on a home brew of hydrogen peroxide.
Okay.
And Dan is the pilot. So he's the dude that does the thing. So, hilarious. So now Dan is traveling around the world doing rocket shows. And,
okay.
And he crashed that thing a couple times and got all jacked up, man. So, there you go. There it is.
And so, like, your first audition was...
My first audition professionally, or as an amateur?
Amateur then.
I think Guys and Dolls would have been
right.
Theater, and then you know after a couple of years, I first audition bagged it was stunt doubling Louis Anderson in a series of commercials for the Sports Authority, a chain from this side of the country.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He did a campaign for them and. Louis's a really big man and couldn't really run around much.
Mm-hmm.
And so they hired me and cut my hair to look like him. And
what did they have you doing?
Just running in a tracksuit and basketball. And they taped, I mean, this was during the heyday of Mr. Jordan. And so they strapped literally duct taped a basketball to my hand and put me on a trampoline. And I had to do that famous Michael Jordan pose.
Right.
Man. That was not fun landing with a ball taped to your hand.
Ow. Okay. So
that was the first one.
Okay. All right. So, like, how did you come about Power Rangers then?
Well, you know, when you have an agent in L.A., there's a computer system called Breakdown Services. It's a company. And their job is they interface with the producers and get all of the casting notices. So, kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen the AP wire at a radio station or a TV station.
Yeah.
It's just got a printer sitting there, and it's loaded with paper, and it's connected to the phone line. And when something goes down, the alarm starts going off, and the thing starts printing.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, there's an earthquake in San Francisco, or whatever. So, same deal, except Breakdown Services prints out every morning at all of the agencies. Now, the agencies pay a fee for access to the system.
Right.
But it's critical. It's a critical juncture in the chain of custody of potential acting work and then booking the jobs.
Okay.
So the agents pay for that service. They look at the breakdown. They're like, oh, my guy, Joe Schmo, he's perfect for this role. And then they give you a call. They schedule you a time. They get with the casting director and schedule a time.
Okay.
After they send a picture.
Oh, okay.
And if the casting director agrees, then you can get an appointment. So. That's how it happened. I mean, something came over the wire for, you know, someone of my type. And there was a call to me, and I reported to the address in Burbank. Actually, I came in a little early because I knew I was going to have problems finding parking down there.
Right.
And when I walked into the audition, it actually hadn't started yet. And one of the writers, Tony Ulrich Oliver, who is the voice of Rick Hunter in the Robotech series, and also a very, very gifted writer and producer, later a producer. He was standing in for the role of this punk character. So he was pleased when I walked in so he could sit down again. And there was a fight scene that was being staged with Walter Jones and another punk character. And they were just basically doing choreography for the pilot that was upcoming.
Right.
So, having had all the experience with those stunt guys in that diving show, and then those the other stunties that came in to do that Western-themed stunt show in Virginia, I had some experience doing fight reactions and with all the theater stuff and the Shakespeare, it was an easy task for me to step in and take reactions and fall down and so. That was it. I mean, from that moment, it was, I was in.
So, like, how was the pilot, I mean, well, the experience working on the pilot different from the actual premiere episode then?
Well, have you ever seen the original pilot?
Right, yeah, I have. Yeah,
well, I mean, it was very different because, you know, there wasn't a lot of money for the pilot. There was enough to shoot it. And there was no, like, unnecessary apparatus. So basically there was a camera and some lights, and that's it. Change of clothes in the bathroom, and we're in a bowling alley in the valley somewhere. Mm-hmm. And then we shot it in 2 days.
So, like, well, how did they decide that, okay, well, you'll be, like the main comedic character?
Well, the bit in the pilot where Punk Number 4 gets thrown down the bowling alley,
right,
on his stomach, That was my idea.
Okay.
Not the event itself, but how it was happened, how they worked the gag out. I suggested implanting a skateboard into my clothing.
Oh.
So I had a skateboard in my shorts, literally. And they took the bottom trucks and we put them out of my fly on my jeans.
Right.
And then I buttoned the pants over the trucks. And then they cut a hole in my shirt for the top, for the front trucks, and I just laid on the board, and they pulled me with monofilament line. And that didn't work because it kept breaking, so they ended up just pushing me into the pins. So, I mean, the way it worked out is they just thought it was funny, because the slapstick humor really hadn't been factored into the show's concept. At that point, because you know they didn't have a green light, and it was an action show,
right.
You know, it wasn't supposed to be wacky. But you can kind of tell from the punks that there's the genesis of what would later become Bulk and Skull. So.
Right.
So that's it. So I was cast first, and I kind of was on the hook for 4 months, waiting for Margaret Lesh, who I just saw yesterday here in New York. And I don't know if you know her or remember her name, but she's one of the executive producers at Fox Kids, and she's the one that greenlit the series in the first place.
Oh, okay.
So her faith led to a really wonderful experience for all of us.
Oh, good times. You said on your blog, actually, that you directed several episodes. So, like, how did that come about, and how was it like being the director for once instead of being in front of the camera?
Well, I think I directed maybe 5 or 6 full episodes and portions of 4 others. And that all started in Australia when we were doing the feature film, the first feature.
Right.
And our schedule had gone so far over that we needed to shoot episodes for the series in Australia. So that whole storyline with, like, colonial America and back in time, that was all shot at Old Sydney Town, which is a colonial recreationist kind of tourist attraction outside of Sydney in the desert, in the blistering Venus-like heat of Australia. I'm not too good at Celsius conversions, but it was like 45 Celsius, and that is
hot.
Yeah. It was brutally hot. So the director of the series shoot, we really had a problem with the Australian Union because they didn't. If they were going to shoot the series there, they wanted their cut. You know,
right.
Of course, because it's their territory.
Right.
So we came to an agreement with the union, and Shuki Levy, one of the producers, was the director of that series of, I think, 7 episodes we ended up doing there.
Okay.
And so Shuki was directing, and I offered a first AD, and of course the first is really, he's the engine. You know, he's got a pair of big ears, and he listens to the director and the DP, and then he's got a big mouth and turns around, and after getting their bidding, he starts screaming his head off to make it happen right now.
Right.
So, of course, I have no problem with that. And actually, the first AD thing was one of the toughest things I've ever done. Really, really hard. But Shuki let me direct a couple scenes there. There was a pretty funny scene in like a shopping mall courtyard with the kids, and we had a Steadicam operator that day, and that shot where the kids all kind of come into the courtyard and they're talking about, you know, with the wrist communicators and needing to go save the day, that was the very first shot I ever directed.
Oh, okay. So did it feel weird at all? Like, I mean, you know, you working
sure.
with them and then
well,
you have
I think
to tell them what to do?
I think after you hate actors, really, after you direct. Well, because actors have a tendency to be really niggling and really, you know, like, you know, persnickety and bitchy. And when you're a director, you realize you now are responsible for the bigger picture.
Right.
And I mean, you have a really large responsibility to many people and the production company to not go over schedule, to make sure you make your day, which means get all of your shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it was a very different experience. Although my fellow actors were very cool with me. I mean, I didn't get any attitude from anyone. And they were really, really supportive, actually.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a problem when you're working with the producer of the show as a director is that he's still the producer, and so he's really busy.
Right.
So I was actually able to devote more time to them, so which was cool.
Whatever happened with the whole monkey situation? You guys
well,
turning into monkeys?
As I kind of laid out in the blog, the monkeys thing was intended to free us up to do a spin-off series that later focus group testing suggested would not be a good idea for the network.
Really?
Well, Power Rangers is about karate, you know. Your fan base is mostly boys.
Right.
You know, 2 to 11 was the demographic, I think, the stated demo.
Time, at the time. Now it's like little 5 to 13 or something.
Yeah, well, they kind of start low-budget Star Trek-ified it. I don't know, it's...
So, like, what was the spinoff going to be about? It was just you guys just doing the same things that you were on Power Rangers?
Well, event? Kind of. Same characters, but different situation. I mean, it was still going to be Angel Grove, but it was going to be Bulk and Skull. One of them inherits a hotel. So it kind of like meets the Golden Palace or something,
yeah.
Like a really bad Golden Girl spinoff. And then there was supposed to be Elvis, the Mexican Elvis was supposed to be in there somewhere. I don't know if have you ever heard of him?
No.
He's an L.A. guy, and he's got like a chihuahua, and he does Elvis, and he's really hilarious. And he's still around performing. So they wanted Elvis and us, and there was going to be like wacky puppets. And so the whole monkeys thing was purely to exit us from the series camera-wise so that we could work on that. And we did work on development for a couple of months, and then it didn't work out because the focus group testing, kids said, where's the fighting?
Right.
You know, because face it, you're really aiming at an older audience with that Laurel and Hardy stuff.
Right.
In some cases, even into a really, really older audience, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how was the shift from, I mean, because you worked up to, I believe, like the beginning of Lost Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. I think I did one episode of Lost Galaxy.
Right.
Yeah. No, it was one episode of In Space, wasn't it?
But weren't you there till like the end of like In Space or something?
Well, when they got trapped on Mirinoi, yeah, we were like technically
there,
and then that was it. I had one like scene in like a spaceship bar as the bartender, and that was it.
So like, why did you decide to leave?
Well, I mean, as happens most often in television, I didn't decide to leave. It was suggested that my tenure was complete.
Oh, okay.
But that was not unanticipated, as Jason Narvi, a year before, had departed for to begin his collegiate career, and who's now working on his doctorate, by the way.
Oh, a doctor? Excuse me.
He's going to be Dr. Narvi. Yeah, he got his master's last year.
Oh, okay.
Actually, a little over a year ago, so he's at UCSB now teaching. It's cool. Theater teacher.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. I helped him teach a class last week. It was really fun. Hilarious.
What kind of class was it?
It
was beginning acting, actually. And they were going into the last week before their final. They had to present their scenes. And I just worked with a couple of students on their scenes and gave kind of a mini lecturette regarding text script breakdown. I mean, we tried to keep the conversation focused on where those students were today, you know, not getting into all the broad showbiz junk, really.
So, like, I mean, were you upset that they suggested that you end your tenure?
No.
You're like,
no, because Narvi had left. I mean, Narvi was gone, and, I mean, are you gonna recast Skull? You know, like on the Dukes of Hazzard, you got, like, you know, the two guys that look just like the other two guys and are named the same and they're cousins of the other? No, I mean, it's just kind of strange. So, no, I mean, it was time. It had been a decade, so it was all right. It was no worries.
Is there anything that you would change about the Bolt character? Anything that you didn't like or would like to see improved upon?
What did Eric do on that?
In the Countdown to Destruction miniseries, we actually got to kick ass, and I thought that it would have been really a great exit for the characters to have them actually become heroes. I mean, you know, wacky like Alpha 5 wacky, but still in the A plot line as heroic characters rather than continuing to be relegated to a supporting role. But, you know, again, you got to face the fact that the show's not about Vulcan Skull. I mean, the show's about the Rangers, and so, you know, so would I change anything? Sure. I think they should have actually become a Ranger characters. I think it would have. I think it would have been very funny.
Really, what Ranger would you be?
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea. The hot pink Ranger.
They never had a purple Ranger, then.
Huh?
They never had a purple Ranger.
No.
You're crazy. You have the plaid Ranger.
They did do a rainbow thing one time, I think. Where somebody gets like schizophrenic or something, and like they're everything at one time. But no, they never did. That's like sacrosanct right there. They never went into that.
I watched all the way up until police
detectives or cops.
Yeah, that's one. That's
oh boy.
As I
thank God for those reinventions, because I kept my job for so long because they decided, oh, detectives, oh, cops, oh, you know.
Oh, monkeys? No, that's like no.
You're just a monkey. I'm the whole damn zoo. Yeah, I like the monkey thing, actually.
Actually, I enjoyed it.
Well, I directed a couple of those episodes, so I got paid to direct and voice the monkey. So that's the most money I ever made on that show.
Go monkey, seriously.
It was cool.
Do you like to sing? Do you like to dance? Do you like the singing and dancing from Disney Channel's High School Musical? Well, here's your chance to show them what you got. Go to tallteenonline.com and enter their contest. The deadline is Sunday, July 23rd. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, just curious, just check them out. Tallteenonline.com.
Hey, this is Pauly Schreier from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. You're listening to No Pink Spandex. Stay away from the spandex. It doesn't breathe.
So I'm just going to mention a few names, and you just react honestly, you know, what you thought about them.
Okay.
So, Chaim Saban.
Yeah, great mentor. I wouldn't call Chaim a friend, but he was my boss for years, and it's a really funny story about when I first met him. He introduced me to his wife. We had never met. I'd been working for him for months, and he brought his wife Cheryl up, and she said, "Cheryl, I want you to meet this guy. He's an idiot." I was like, thanks. Yeah, I'm serious. There was actually an explicative in there somewhere. And I was like, oh, this is my boss. Yeah. It's pretty cute.
Okay, so
I love Shuki. He's a good guy. Shuki's an awesome composer. And I count him a friend. I saw him fairly recently, and you know, he's warm as ever. So he's a visionary guy and a great creator, fantastic director.
Is he really engaged to Sarah Brown?
That's really, really old news. Really, really old news, and no, that was never the case.
Oh, okay.
Nope.
Never read Wikipedia and take it to... Okay, so...
Well, that's for sure, because there's something in my entry which is incorrect also.
Really? What is it?
My dressing room was never decked out in Robotech regalia. Although I'd love to know who put that in there, because it's obviously somebody who knew something about what was going on set, but... Pretty funny. Jay's a good guy, man. You know, we didn't hang out a lot, but he's a good co-worker. You know, I never had problems with any of those guys.
Okay.
You know, we got along just fine. Jason was kind of an extreme guy, and
Jason, which
Jason is Austin's true God-given name.
Oh, no, because I mean, I thought you told me an actor, but go ahead.
No, I'm, you know, I. It is a little weird that his real name is his character name, and then he has his nom de plume as Austin. Right. So that was, it was always a little confusing.
Right.
Especially when Jason Frank joined the cast, and it got really confusing.
Exactly.
All right, who's next?
It's, I forgot how you say your name. Twee Trang? Is that how you say your name?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, what can you say? I mean, her fate was unfortunate. And just one of those things that makes you think about your life and treasure the time that you have here, because you never know when it's taken away from you.
Right.
It was a really sad accident. And definitely not her fault. The auto crash was just one of those things that happens, you know? She was in the passenger seat.
I take a cab.
Okay,
I saw Walt really recently.
Okay.
And he's jamming. And I do mean that. He's great. I mean, he's a total Los Angeles professional. And I love the guy.
What's he up to now?
A lot of stuff. He is up to a lot of things. He's still acting.
Right.
He is he's doing a lot of professional salsa.
Right.
Because he's such an awesome dancer. And he and his lady got a family going, and they're doing great in the city.
Okay.
So yeah, I saw him at a audition like a year ago, and he had the hair was huge. And the irony is, I'm at this audition with all these black guys because it was an AIDS PSA for MTV,
right,
focused on Africa. Tony Oliver was producing the spot. And so he called me to come audition for this thing, and I'm in a room with all these black cats who are all, like, South African, and, you know, they've all got these, like, really strong, like, Kofi Annan accents, and I'm sitting in the parking lot going, reading my script and trying to, like, be convincing. I made it to the second round,
right,
and the AIDS is killing us in Africa. But it was really stupid, really, right, honestly. So they actually hired a guy from Africa.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
is, that's the problem with L.A., 'cause I'm from Africa. Or I can be from Africa if you want me to be.
Okay, the next one, Amy Jo Johnson.
AJ's still working. I mean, she's really the one that's worked the most. I think she's pretty much a mainstay on Lifetime for women.
I mean, recently The Division just got canceled. I'm like, aw, I actually like that show. But, you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, she'll be back. I mean, she'll be back. She's been working steadily doing films and TV and... She and I exchanged a short email recently, and she's doing great.
Oh, okay. That's cool. So, David Yost?
Dave's a very funny guy, but he'll never let it on. He'll never let on that he's very wry. So, he'll say something, and you think he's, like, being catty, but he's really not. Until later, when you realize the full picture, and he's punking you. He's definitely, he was someone I had to watch out for, because he would always try and get me in trouble.
And,
he would instigate things. He would say something to somebody, and or he would tell the first AD that I did something that I didn't do, just so they would yell at me. And or he would say, "Oh, there's a phone call," and so I'd walk away, and then they'd need me on set, and I'd get in trouble.
Oh,
you know. Yeah, he's a pretty funny guy.
Okay. Jason David Frank.
JDF is in Dallas now.
Right.
He's got the biggest karate school in the state of Texas.
Right.
And he and his wife and his girls, they're doing great. What can I say? I mean, Jason's an awesome guy. We actually pitched a few shows to Disney a couple of years ago, animated show ideas, a couple of concepts from him, and I helped him with some graphics and some footage for some pitches that he was doing for some reality fight stuff.
Right.
You're shot in the dark, you know, in the business. You're always trying. You never know what's going to happen. So it's like the lottery. You can't win if you don't play.
Right.
You'll never sell that TV show unless you get the chutzpah up to go try and sell it.
Right.
So he's doing great, man. He's an awesome, awesome performer. An incredible martial artist. I mean, he is really the most badass karate guy I've ever seen with my own eyes.
Okay.
He's done some stuff where he's jumped from standing position and, like, kicked 2 feet over my head and then, like, lands in the same spot in the same pose. And you're like, dude, that is sick.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
I have some rad pictures of him from Australia working out one morning.
Really?
Just snaps that I was shooting. Oh man, he's a great, great performer.
Harry Dickens.
I like Jay. Oh, okay. He's a prankster too. He's got me into some trouble.
What did he do to you?
You know, what can I say? That won't get either of us in trouble. He's just a really squirrely dude, and you know he comes across as very sweet and demure, but he's really a complete shark who's looking to make a good lap at your expense at every moment.
Okay.
I mean, it's a good natured thing, but yeah, he's dangerous. He and David Yost had an interesting time together. Well, I mean, they were constantly pranking each other, to the point where it got. Look at you! Oh my God. That's funny.
Okay, so Steve Cardenas.
Who's in San Antonio right now? He's back in his hometown. We spoke recently, and I'm going to see him at Christmas time.
Okay.
And he's cool. He's teaching karate. He's jamming.
Right.
I like Steve-O. He's always a good guy.
You like everything.
I was his acting coach when he first came in.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, next one, Johnny Bosch.
Johnny's a really interesting guy. He's a very multifaceted individual. He's a very deep man.
Right.
He's got a really strong spiritual center in his life, and he's an awesome performer. He's got a great understanding of his craft and his tool, and he's working it out. You know, he's got his band, and he's still doing films, I think he actually did some awesome anime recently too. He was doing an animated show of some kind.
Right.
So I don't speak to John often. I had to get some armor that he had of mine back. I had some Elizabethan metal plate mail gauntlets that he had borrowed.
Okay.
So I had to track him down because I needed him for a show, and I saw him when I got the gauntlets back, and he was cool.
Okay.
So yeah. Like I said, I got no enemies in my former cast, so you're not gonna say any names, and I'm all that son of a bitch.
Yeah, well, no, actually, that's a good character to have, because, like, you know, you get along with everybody, everyone's cool, and, you know, no enemies coming after you.
It's kind of like going to Mars, you know, you're all trapped in a capsule together. You got to get along, or you're going to be like,
right.
I'm going to kill all of you.
All right, the next one, Karen Ashley.
You know, I never really knew Karen very well.
Okay.
I mean, she was a very sweet girl, and we got along great on set. Yeah, I don't really know what became of her. I don't know where she's at.
I think a year or two ago, she did a film with Johnny, and a horror film under her production company.
Cool, man.
So, yeah.
Well, it is a big city, and there's a lot of actors out there, so I kind of lost track of her over the years.
Right. Catherine Sutherland.
Oh, we all loved her. She's a really cute girl. You know, they imported her for the show. So that was hard for her. You know, kind of moving from home and doing this great job at being totally alone, and I think it didn't take too long before she felt comfortable. Interesting connection later is that she posed for a photo shoot playing the role of Maya Antares in The Red Star.
Right.
My good friend Christian Gossett, who's the Red Star creator, he was doing a photo shoot and he wanted to dress up some actors and photograph them, use the images in the comic book or use them as reference. And he called Kat up, and she came and posed as Maya. And she'd be an awesome Maya, too. And since Universal just optioned Red Star, I think it would be so cool to see her come back
right.
in. But they'll probably choose some Russian lady, honestly.
It was because, like, I mean, I hear now she's, like, a professional fitness trainer now.
Cool.
And, you know, and then, like, she had a baby, like, just a while ago or something like that.
I heard that.
So, you know. But, yeah, I would love to see her on the screen again. I liked her.
Me too. She's a good actress.
Nikia Baris.
She's a very fun-loving gal. We had a great time with her. You know, another person with a really strong spiritual center in her life, and not ashamed, and not opposed to sharing her views. You know, and really reaching out. You know, and really doing a ministry, her own ministry.
Right.
So I respect Nikia a lot. She's awesome. Awesome to work with.
Do you keep in contact with her at all, or?
No. There's only a few that I do.
Okay.
Because, you know, it kind of feels labored, you know, when you're just trying. It's like high school, you know. Do you
right.
really want to be calling all those people? No, not really, right?
Yeah, there's some people like, no, rather not. But yeah, it gets hard. It gets hard after a while.
You just don't want to labor the point, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Jason Harvey, of course.
I hate that son of a bitch. All right. Well, you know, I saw him like last week. He's doing great. Saw a bunch of his leftist friends down in the village last night for the legitimate theater company's premiere of their show. And I would suggest to everybody that they go see the show.
What show is it?
It is called Jesus Hector Christ. And it's playing at the Gene Shittleman. It's a theater on the corner of Lafayette and Bond Street.
Okay.
In the village.
Right.
And they just opened last night. Very funny show. I mean, heavy stuff, but excellent.
Right, right.
So, and Narvi is one of the founding members of the legitimate theater company.
Oh, okay.
Because all of his compatriots from Franklin and Marshall in Pennsylvania, where he attended and got his bachelor's, a lot of those kids are now here in town making their fortunes. Yeah. So I was hanging out with all the bohemians last night.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Oh, yeah, it was great.
So, like, any funny moments or stories or whatever? I mean, you shared a few, but any other moments that you remember from on set?
Sure. My favorite one that never made it into the show was we did an episode where we were in an airplane and AJ was flying the plane and we're screaming, oh, she's flying the plane, oh, God. Well, that we had a conversation in the airplane. Every time we're scared together, we always had that thing where I would say something and Narvi would go, yeah, and he would repeat the line.
Right.
Well, kind of similar when Goldar had the bus and he was like shaking the bus and we're screaming and flipping around. We wanted to say, I wanted to say, I want my mommy. And Narvi was going to say, yeah, I want your mommy. And we tried to get that in the show like 10 times, and they would never let it in. Thanks. I mean, we always did it, but they always cut it.
Right.
Because I guess it's a little off color, but yeah, I want your mommy. It's pretty damn funny, if you ask me. So that's about it. That's all I have to say, Lisa J.
What are you up to now? What did you do right after leaving Power Rangers? What did you pursue?
I directed a season of Hello Kitty animated stuff.
Oh, okay.
And continued to do voice work as a performer. And then I had an attack of conscience and went and got a job at Walt Disney Feature Animation
in
the camera department.
Okay.
So I was a camera assistant and coordinator for 4 years. And then I got rolled off, which is a colorful Disney term for you're fired. Kind of a cutback in the company, and I did a software implementation project called Project Tomorrowland for Disney for about a year, and then I jumped into my current position at the prototyping studio.
Oh, okay. What is the one thing that you learned from your experience on the set, or just in the industry, period?
Oh, don't ever let anybody tell you can't do it. Because
right.
My high school drama teacher suggested I stop acting and
really?
Join his network marketing company because I had so much personality. Because that TV thing's never going to work out for you. Well, when I saw him years later at 7-Eleven, I said, I'll let you know. I'll let you know when it goes south.
Right,
but it's
right.
Going okay. So just don't ever let anybody tell you can't do it. I mean, don't be foolhardy. I mean, there are people that try for 15, 20 years to become an actor, and it still never happens, and then a lot of things suffer because of it. That's not a good route to go. But give it an honest effort. You know, if you want to be a performer, go do it. Go out there and stop talking about doing it and go join a play somewhere and go get some experience and have fun with it.
Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Right on.